Greetings, warriors, veterans, and American-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Hoo-wah! The Frontlines of Freedom team really appreciates you joining us this fine day in America. We are proud Americans. Here's what we have for you this hour. We're going to start by talking with Clyde Prestowitz about China. Then we'll review last weekend's Service Academy football games. And, of course, we'll conclude with military history and our self-defense report. It's a pleasure to introduce Clyde Prestowitz. He heads the Economic Strategic Institute. He's just written a book, The World Turned Upside Down, America, China, and the Struggle for Global Leadership. And wow, is that our topic for today. Clyde, thank you for joining us. Welcome to the show.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
Clyde, give us a little bit about your background. How does someone get into the point of founding something like the Economic Strategic Institute and knowing a lot about China? Is that something you just grew up wanting to do, or how'd that happen?
Well, it's a bit of a long story. Let me try to shorten it. After I graduated from college, I got a grant to go to the East-West Center in Honolulu, which at that time was run by the State Department. And the deal was that I got a grant to study whatever I wanted to study, but I had to study an Asian language. And I picked Japanese because at the time the Japanese were running away with a lot of the key industries in the U.S., but while I was in Honolulu, I met a beautiful young woman who happened to be Chinese, and I married her and thereby developed an interest in China as well as in Japan. So fast forward from there, I went to grad school in Honolulu and then in Tokyo, where I studied, finished my Japanese study. I went in the Foreign Service, was a Foreign Service officer in The Hague in Holland for a couple of years. I left the Foreign Service, went into industry, joined Scott Paper Company in Philadelphia, then in Europe, back to Japan in the 1970s. And then in the 1980s, when Ronald Reagan was elected, out of a clear blue sky, I got an invitation from the Secretary of Commerce to come to Washington and join the Reagan administration, which I did. I became the counselor to the Secretary of Commerce. And at the time, we were deeply involved in negotiating trade issues with Japan. And so I did all that in the 1980s. I wrote a couple of books as a result of that experience. But then in the 1990s, things shifted. China became the center of attention. I was made chairman of President Clinton's Presidential Commission on Trade and Investment in Asia, and that got us into China. I had led the first U.S. trade mission to China in 1982 under President Reagan. And so as China became more important, I spent less time in Japan and more time in China. And just 2 years ago, then wrote the book that you mentioned.
Okay. Well, that's a logical flow. And certainly it has given you an understanding of our relationship between both China and Japan and the United States. So, wow, this isn't just something you were interested in. This is something you've lived.
I have lived it. Yes, I have. Yep.
Okay. At least since World War II, we have been the world's global leader and sometimes the world's cop. China has made it very clear, for some time ago, that they want to be the world's leader, and they're working to achieve it. And they are working to achieve it. How is this going to play out? From your perspective, what is going on here?
Well, I think you put your finger on the key issue. China does want to be the world leader. And the thing is, there's two ways to be a leader. One way to be a leader is through example, and through developing, you know, friendly relationships. Another way to be the leader is through exertion of power. And I think that the conflict between China and America is that China sees itself as having been humiliated in the 19th century, having gone through revolution and war in the 20th century, and now they think they want to make the Chinese Communist Party wants to make the 21st century the Chinese century, as the 20th century was the American century. And, you know, on the one hand, I don't see that there's any difficulty with a country trying to improve itself and trying to do better. The difficulty is that China does it by use of force and by impinging on the freedoms of other countries, particularly the United States. And so we're in a contest here that's kind of it's an all surface kind of contest. It's economic, it's military, it's cultural, it's philosophical. And we in the U.S. are just kind of waking up to it.
Yes, sir. This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're discussing China with Clyde Presowitz. At the basic sense of one country wanting to be the leader, that's a noble thing, or at least it's a worthy goal. But as you pointed out, there's different kinds of leadership, and the dictatorial type of leadership is a threat to almost everybody, isn't it? I think so.
It is. A key element of China's modus operandi is coercion. So, you know, for example, China has been a big importer of iron ore and coal and other materials from Australia. In the past year, the Australians have said things about Taiwan that China doesn't like. So the way China responds to that is by suddenly cutting off its imports from Australia. And so, for example, lobsters imported from Australia have been left to die on the dock in Shanghai. China has shifted its buying of coal and iron ore to other countries, all kind of as a slap at Australia, essentially to force Australia to adopt or to be nicer to China, and, you know, not to say things about Taiwan. Or Norway gave the Nobel Prize to a Chinese dissident several years ago. And no sooner had Norway given the prize than Norwegian salmon exports to China dried up. So this is a way that China operates to use whatever leverage it has to force other countries to kind of say what China wants them to say.
Isn't that really economic warfare?
It is a kind of economic warfare, yes. Yeah.
And certainly, while it's, I guess, quite legal, you can buy from whomever you wish, it's not the kind of person you would reasonably want to ever be doing a lot of business with, because you know they're liable to do this.
Well, that's exactly right. And on top of that, it's in fact not legal, because China was made in 2001, China became a member of the World Trade Organization. And so under the rules of the World Trade Organization, you don't act the way that China has been acting. So not only is it not being polite, but it's breaking the rules of the World Trade Organization.
And is the World Trade Organization going to do anything about that? Have they been looking at it?
That's the probably not is the answer. The World Trade Organization is a difficult body, and it's very difficult to get complaints adjudicated properly in the World Trade Organization. But, you know, nevertheless, the point is that China has been in abrogation.
So it's very clear that China has muscles and knows how to use them. It's very likely that they encourage the trade to benefit themselves, but then at the same time knew that it was a tool they could use if they wanted to push somebody back into line. And they don't seem to have any rule of ethics. As I've looked at all the things they're doing, ethics does not seem to be one of their long suits. Is that a fair statement?
Well, I think the Chinese would probably say, well, you know, we have Chinese ethics. I mean, to be fair to the Chinese, they were treated badly by the Western countries in the 19th and by Japan in the first part of the 20th century.
Yes.
So China has, you know, not had necessarily an easy road, and they have legitimate complaints. But I think one of the fundamental problems here is that China has published a document called Document Number 9. And Document Number 9 states, the title is on the ideological sphere. And the document states that China does not believe in human rights, in universal human rights. It doesn't believe there's such a thing.
So that's what we'll be talking about when we come back. There's more to discuss about America and China, and Clyde will stay with us. This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. It's time to run hard for a couple of miles, troops. This while thinking patriotic thoughts. Clyde and I will be right back.
$30 trillion in debt, 20 years of endless war, and veterans not able to get the care they deserve. These are some of the issues concerned Veterans for America is confronting head-on. At CVA, we aim to amplify the veteran perspective to create a better future for all Americans. but we need your help. Join CVA in shaping a better tomorrow for you, your family, and your community. Visit cv4a.org to learn more and join the movement. That's cv4a.org.
Troops America has changed, and if you're like me, you'd defend yourself and your family if necessary. But as noble as this is, experts recommend never speaking to the police without an attorney, even if you're the victim. That's why I'm a member of U.S. Law Shield, the very best self-defense insurance that I've found. They provide unlimited attorney coverage for civil, criminal, appeal, and retrial at a very affordable price. Check uslawshield.com and use the code FRONTLINES. That's uslawshield.com. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thank you for joining us today on Frontlines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation with Clyde Prestowitz, the head of the Economic Strategy Institute on America versus China. Clyde, you were talking about China's perspective on human rights.
Yeah, so I mentioned that China has published this document called Document Number 9. The title is On the Ideological Sphere. And it denies the fundamental notion of universal human rights. China says we don't believe in that. Freedom of press and speech. China says, nope, we don't believe in that. So there's just this fundamental conflict between the U.S. and China that it's very hard to adjudicate, or, you know, because there's this fundamental misalignment between the values of the two countries, it complicates everything else. I mean, let's take, for example, Apple Corporation. You know, Apple is one of the most successful companies in the world. We think it's an American company. It's established in the United States, but it makes most of its products in China. And because it makes most of its products in China, it is subject to pressure from China. And so, for example, back in 2019, when students in Hong Kong were demonstrating against the imposition of authoritarian rules in Hong Kong, there was an app in the Apple App Store called Hong Kong Map Live. And using the app, the kids could see Hong Kong in real time, and they could see where the police were. And so they would go demonstrate where the police were not. This drove the Chinese Communist Party crazy. The authorities in Beijing began complaining loudly about Apple's App Store. And within 2 days, the app was out of the App Store. And so, this fundamental clash between telling an American company, get that app out of your App Store, and the company does it, you know, it's very difficult to get past that kind of a difference.
It's certainly not the kind of world that we stand up for and attempt to provide leadership for.
No, exactly. Yeah.
So let's get specifically to what kinds of things is China doing in the United States? Can we talk about that?
Sure. Well, a lot of things, of course. A lot of Chinese students are studying in the United States. And in many ways, this is good for the United States. The Chinese students are good students. They're particularly strong in science and mathematics. But there's also a problem in that many U.S. universities have become economically dependent on the tuitions being paid by Chinese students. And the economic dependence on China then makes the universities subject to coercion. So, you know, if you are a Chinese scholar, in order to remain up to date on what's happening in China, you need to go to China. But to go to China, you need a visa. And if you say things the Chinese don't like loudly in public, you won't get a visa. And so if a university becomes too dependent on Chinese tuitions, it can expect to be under pressure from China to say or not say certain things that the Chinese like or don't like. And, you know, I think that obviously a lot of the products that we use every day are made in China. A lot of them are made by U.S. companies operating like Apple in China. And the products are typically of good quality and they're cheap. And in that way, they are positive for the U.S. economy. But at the same time, China has done an absolutely superb job in lifting U.S. technology and putting it in China and in hacking into the databases of companies like Lockheed and Apple and others and stealing technology. And so it's kind of a two-edged sword. We're always dealing with this two-edged sword. One part of it is positive and useful to us, but the other part cuts us. And we have not recognized the double-edged nature of the relationship until quite recently.
But it's about time that we did. And I'm hoping that most companies and our federal government recognize this and are acting appropriately to reduce China's influence in our nation. But I don't see that happen.
I think it is happening. I would disagree with you there. I think it is happening. I mean, the CHIPS Act that was recently proposed by the administration and passed by the Congress with both parties' support, very important. This is going to revitalize the semiconductor industry production in the United States, which is a very powerful move, in my view, in the right direction. At the same time, I think that the U.S. has made it clear that in the case of China's tacit support for Russia's invasion of Ukraine, U.S. has, I think, taken the right approach to chastising China for that. So I think there's a wake-up going on in the U.S.
That's good.
Yeah, it is.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Clyde Prestowitz. Clyde, we're getting towards the end of our interview. Take a few minutes right now and highlight the key points that you'd like our listeners to take from our talk today.
Okay. Well, first, I think it's very important for listeners to understand that American industry CEOs of companies like Apple are incredibly important. And the reason is because we call them American companies because they're chartered in America. But if they are producing a lot of their production in China, Apple, for example, produces virtually everything it sells in China, it makes them subject to coercion by China. And so we have to understand that when an American CEO talks about China, he or she is being watched carefully by Beijing. My own view is that we should have some requirements on American corporations to move production out of China, to reduce their dependence on China. And when they testify before the U.S. Congress or the U.S. government agencies, I think CEOs who are heavily dependent on China need to explain that. They need to say, I make everything in China, so that the audience will understand that they are not necessarily uncompromised in their testimony. The second thing I think is very important is I mentioned that the U.S. CHIPS Act is revitalizing production of semiconductors in the U.S. That's a really big, important step in the right direction, but we need to do it in more industries. We need to have lithium, for example. The new electric cars need lithium batteries. Well, we don't make lithium in the U.S. China does. Solar panels. We don't make many solar panels in the U.S. We're dependent on China for solar panels. We invented solar panels. We ought to be doing more in production domestically of solar panels and solar technology. And I could keep on going, but I think the point is we want to revitalize American manufacturing, make it less dependent on China, and U.S. corporations who are operating in China, Apple's beginning to move some of their production. India, the more of that happens, the better off we'll be, I think.
That makes real sense. Now, your book, The World Turned Upside Down, it's awesome. It should be read by everybody who's concerned about our nation and its world's future. How can listeners buy a copy?
You can always go to Amazon or to your local bookstore, and I hope you do.
I hope everybody does. We need to understand so that we can be supporting this move that you said we've already started, and I'm glad it has. Clyde, thank you. Thank you for taking time to join us today. Thank you for your service to our nation by making our challenge so clear. I really appreciate you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Coming up next on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll review last weekend Service Academy football games. Then we'll open our weekly mailbag. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for one-arm push-up. Just do a dozen with each arm twice. Then take a break, but stay in the area. I'll be right back.
HelpVet.net was created to be the nation's number one resource center for all veterans, active military, and families. At HealthVet.net, you'll find up-to-date information on benefits available through the VA, resources on education, employment, health and wellness, and more. Find hundreds of nationally recognized organizations offering discounts on products and services, as well as local organizations from attorneys to yoga studios. You'll find them at HealthVet.net. Visit HealthVet.net for all your family's needs.
Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to vetted veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Front Lines of Freedom promo code. Welcome back to Front Lines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Troops, I really do welcome your comments and questions. Contact me through frontlinesoffreedom.com or comment on Facebook. Troops, of course, it is football season, and of course, it's time for football. Co-host Quentin Roberts and me to review last weekend's Service Academy football games. Welcome, Quentin. It was quite a fun weekend, wasn't it?
It was, Danny. I tell you what, we are in the thick of the football season, and our Service Academies are really all playing good ball, improving, even if the scoreboard doesn't always show it in Navy's case this week.
That's right. We are improving. That's what's important. And we got to keep improving, right?
That's right, Danny, because, you know, the season's about half. We're about at the halfway point. And, of course, as they say, you know, you can win games in September and October, but the championships and, of course, the Commander-in-Chief's trophy is won in November and December.
And that time is coming up really quick. Okay, last weekend, Army played and beat Colgate. Beat them pretty well.
They did, 42-17 in West Point. And, you know, it was the Black Knights really getting their rushing attack back on track. This was the Army team we've been looking for as they amassed a total of 467 yards. And guess how many of that was on the ground? All 467 yards. That's Black Knight football.
Yes.
So, yes, it was a great day for the Black Knights when we kind of look at the tail of the tape. It's, you know, just all the way around. They did have a few too many penalties, 8 penalties for 55 yards, and they did not win the time of possession. Really, it was about 30-30, half and half. But you know what? They really did what they had to do. We look at turnovers. They did win the turnover battle, as Colgate had 2 turnovers to Army's 1. When we look at what happened, it was after receiving the opening kickoff, Colgate drove down the field and had a 49-yard field goal to go up 3-0. But Jamel Jones wasted no time in his start as he took Army's opening play from scrimmage, a quarterback keeper 75 yards to the house. It was the Army's longest run of the season and made the score 7-3. From there, it was really, it was back and forth a little bit as Colgate came back with the Michael Brescia 1-yard touchdown run, but then it was all Army as Hayden Reed had a 2-yard touchdown run. And then in the second quarter, it was just more Army with another touchdown from Bram Murphy and another one from Ajon Marshall. So at the half, it was Army 28 to Colgate 17. The third quarter, they really put the game away with 2 more touchdowns to really I put it on the ice and cruise into a 42-17 score as they cruise to another victory, moving them to 2-4 on the year as Colgate drops to 1-5.
And as Army did really well, so did Air Force against UNLV.
They did, Danny. You know, and Air Force played a little bit of a different game, but not much. I mean, they rushed for 406 yards and only threw for 14, amassing 420 yards of total offense, but holding UNLV, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, running Rebels weren't running so big on that day, as they only totaled 179 yards and only 61 on the ground, as Air Force pulled away to a 42-7 victory. Air Force moved to 5-2 on the season. UNLV dropped to 4-3 on the season, and both teams are even in the conference at 2-2. But it was a big first half that Air Force capitalized on, as they went up 28-7 at the half. And it was a 28-0 score before UNLV finally got on the score. But Air Force did not take their foot off the pedal in the second half. Brad Roberts added another run, as well as Emmanuel Michel, to win the game and put it on ice 42-7.
They done good. Navy versus SMU. They finally got their foot on the gas towards the end, but it wasn't soon enough or enough, was it?
No, it wasn't. They just fell short, Denny. You know, Navy, though, when you look at the statistics, they gained 510 yards total, 372 on the ground, 138 through the air. They dominated time of possession, 40 minutes to SMU's 20 minutes. But it just wasn't enough. They dug themselves a little too deep of a hole as they were down 40-20 in the second half before making a late charge to close the score to 40-34. Ty Levitai, the quarterback, though, we have seen him evolve. We have seen Coach Niumatalolo's play calling take advantage of Ty Levitai's skills to both run and throw. He ran for a career high 120 yards and completed 9 of 21 passes. So Navy outgained SMU, but just like I said, dug themselves a little too big of a hole in order to come out of in this one, and fell to the Mustangs 40-34.
How about the Coast Guard Academy and Merchant Marine?
Well, Denny, I knew you were going to ask me about them. And so I did a little research and found that the Coast Guard Academy, the Coasties, are still having a tough season as they lost in their homecoming game 24-17 to Catholic. Their next game will be at MIT, which by chance just played the Merchant Marine Academy. And it did not go well for MIT, as the Merchant Marine Academy blanked them, shut them out, 17-0. The next game for the Merchant Marine Academy will be, guess who? Who did Coast Guard just lose to? Catholic University. It will be played in Washington, D.C. The Merchant Marine Academy has moved to 5-1 on the season. Their seasons are moving in opposite directions, it seems. But, of course, we know they have the big rivalry game at the end of the year. So that's what it looked like for the Merchant Marine Academy.
All righty. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Quentin Roberts about Service Academy football. Okay, this week, there are going to be some real games. Army versus Louisiana Monroe. They're about the same in their records, aren't they?
Well, Denny, they really are. You know, Army's 2-4, Louisiana Monroe's 2-5. Army's favored by 3 is they will host the Louisiana Monroe Warhawks. And you know what? I tell you, you know, you bring those Louisiana boys up to New York. Now, they don't have that gumbo before the game. So you better take Army in those points for that game. I think the Black Knights will roll. Navy will host the University of Houston Cougars, where the Cougars are favored by 3. They're at a 500 record, but I'm telling you, you cannot count out those midshipmen. As I said, Coach Niumatalolo is really dialing up the buttons to keep them competitive. And Air Force hosts a doozy, a dandy in Boise State. Air Force is 5-2 and Boise is 4-2, 3-0 in the conference. This game always delivers an exciting finish. So tune in to the Air Force Boise State game.
Those games are all going to be worth watching. Thank you, Quentin, for your insights and for being a part of the team. This is fun. We'll be doing it again next week, and I hope we're talking about 3 wins.
3-0, that's where we have to go. And then after that, of course, we know it's Air Force Army week.
That's it. And I'm sorry that I'll have to be rooting against you then. Troops, if you're a veteran having trouble getting your disability approved by the VA, contact Barry Law. Reach them at PTSDlawyers.com. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Next up, it's time for our weekly mailbag. Then it's military history time. You've reported for duty to Front Lines of Freedom. Stand tall, troops. Let's do some more push-ups. About 60 this time. I want you Ranger ready, then stand at ease.
Fresh, flash, frozen from the American farmer every time. PatriotFoods.com, hit the shop now button. You're supporting a veteran family in need every time you shop. Look at us online, see how we give back. For the servicemen and women of this great country, we are fighting for the American farmer. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM, 10% off today, folks. Shop now.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. I buy Patriot Foods. It's great. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM.
Do you have a story inside you yearning to come out? As a self-published author, you are free to creatively distribute your book online or using your own professional connections. White Feather Press will publish your manuscript and set up online distribution, allowing the author to retain all copyright and distribution rights as well as all profits. Check out White Feather Press at publishyourdream.com. White Feather Press, reaffirming faith in God, family, and country.
I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. This is the final formation for this week on Frontlines of Freedom. Okay, team, it's mailbag time. I welcome comments from you, our listeners. I really appreciate you. So do send your thoughts to me at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Facebook. Skip, what's the first comment?
Well, Tom, an Army dad, is really upset at the price of gas, particularly when he looks at the price 2 years ago, less than half of what it costs today.
Tom, you're right. And this cost of gas costs our military more as they train and prepare to deploy if necessary. The very gas price is the fruit of our incompetent national leadership.
And I'm hoping that changes here within the next month here, Colonel, because this is getting ridiculous.
Well, we can impact it with the election. Okay, now it's time for military history. What's the first one, Skip?
Well, on 25 October, 1854, in an event alternately described as one of the most heroic or disastrous episodes in British military history, Lord James Cardigan led a charge of the Light Brigade cavalry against well-defended Russian artillery during the Crimean War. The British were winning the Battle of Balaclava when Cardigan received his order to attack the Russians. His cavalry gallantly charged down the valley and were decimated by the heavy Russian guns, suffering 40% casualties. It was later revealed that the order was the result of confusion and was not given intentionally. Lord Cardigan, who survived the battle, was hailed as a national hero in Britain.
It was indeed. Indeed, the Charge of the Light Brigade was one of the more famous poems out there. I think Rudyard Kipling wrote it. Into the Valley of the Shadow of Death rode the 600.
Yeah.
I'm glad
yeah,
I was one of them.
Well, the Confederates had a bit of a Charge of the Light Brigade at Gettysburg, as I recall. Pickett's Charge.
Yes, indeed. We don't seem to learn, do we? Okay. On 25 October 1862, a sarcastic President Lincoln wired General George McClellan, quote, "I have just read your dispatch about sore-tongued and fatigued horses. Will you pardon me for asking what horses your army has done since the Battle of Antietam that fatigue anything?" Lincoln was clearly out of patience with McClellan. The president had ordered him to pursue Confederate General Robert E. Lee into Virginia after Antietam on September 17th, but McClellan dallied over a month. A little over a week after sending this message, Lincoln replaced McClellan with Ambrose Burnside.
Yeah, and Colonel, one of the things that I've read in analyses of McClellan is that he was great at organizing and training an army, but he had so much pride in it that he didn't want to send them into harm's way. And that's one of the reasons that he was so cold feet.
Well, there's a difference between training and doing it, isn't there?
You know, absolutely.
And General Burnside had a lot of facial hair. That's where the term sideburns came from.
That's
what I'm known for.
Yeah, I recognize that from the 60s. All right. On 28 October 1886, the Statue of Liberty, a gift of friendship from the people of France to the people of the United States, was dedicated in New York Harbor by President Grover Cleveland.
That's a great gift, and we owe them a lot, because without French help, we wouldn't have won our Revolutionary War. And on 28 October 1918, during World War I, sailors from the German high seas fleet steadily refused to obey an order from the German Admiralty to go out to sea and launch one final attack on the mighty British Navy, echoing the frustrated, despondent mood of many on the side of the Central Powers during the last days of World War I.
And on 25 October 1944, during the World War II Battle of the Leyte Gulf, the Japanese deployed kamikaze, or divine wind suicide bombers, against American warships for the first time. It proved costly to both sides.
I can't even imagine suicide bombers, but that was part of their culture. It worked. It cost us a lot of people.
Well, yeah, and you just noticed in the news just today, there are kamikaze drones now being deployed by the Russians against the Ukrainians.
Well, actually, I don't mind seeing a drone kamikaze.
That's right. They are soulless drones, aren't they?
I think so, yes. I haven't checked. And on 24 October 1945, less than 2 months after the end of World War II, the United Nations was formally established with the ratification of the UN Charter by the five permanent members of the Security Council and a majority of the other signatories. Little did we know how expensive and ineffective it would be.
And on 24 October 1951, President Harry Truman finally proclaimed that the nation's war with Germany, begun in 1941, was officially over. Fighting had ended in the spring of 1945. Then the Allied powers took over Germany and ran things. The Western powers of the U.S., Britain, and France let their areas combine into West Germany. When the West German government proved itself competent, we ended the official war and let West Germany be an independent nation. Russia kept control of East Germany for a long time. There is now one Germany. Incidentally, we did basically the same thing with Japan. Colonel, I didn't know that, so I'm glad I'm on this show. I can just keep learning and learning, and so can our listeners.
You know, and it worked so well with both Germany and Japan that we didn't do it with Afghanistan. We didn't do it with Iran. Something to be learned.
Yeah.
And on 24 October 1954, President Eisenhower pledged to support South Vietnamese President Ngo Dinh Diem's government and military forces. Eisenhower promised direct assistance to this government. Eisenhower called for land reform and a reduction of government corruption. Diem agreed as a precondition for receiving aid, but he never actually followed through. This refusal to make any substantial changes to meet the needs of the people led to an extreme civil unrest and then eventually a coup by dissident South Vietnamese generals in which Diem and his brother were murdered.
Colonel, I always like it when you get to read the stuff about Vietnam because you speak the language. I wonder why.
Yeah, though it's been a while.
All right. On 27 October 1962, complicated and tension-filled negotiations between the U.S. and the Soviet Union finally result in a plan to end the two-week-old Cuban Missile Crisis. A frightening period in which nuclear holocaust seemed imminent began to come to an end as the Soviets withdrew their missiles from Cuba.
Yeah, we put up a blockade to keep the Soviets from delivering the nuclear warheads. And that was, I was a cadet at West Point during that time. And it was so tense that we thought we were going to get an early commission and put to work out in the Army. Fortunately, that didn't happen. Fortunately for the Army, too. On 25 October 1971, in a dramatic reversal of its longstanding commitment to the nationalist Chinese government of Taiwan and a policy of non-recognition of the Communist People's Republic of China, America's UN representatives voted to seat the People's Republic of China as a permanent member. Over American objections, Taiwan was expelled. There was only one China, and it was Communist China. Both countries should have been allowed membership, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree, and I think we're kind of paying for that right now.
Aren't we?
On 25 October 1983, the United States invaded Grenada. President Ronald Reagan, citing the threat posed to American nationals on the Caribbean nation of Grenada by that nation's Marxist regime, ordered the Marines to invade and secure their safety. There were nearly 1,000 Americans in Grenada at the time, many of them students at the island's medical school. In little more than a week, Grenada's government was overthrown.
That was a little scary and a little hairy, but it worked. And on 26 October 2001, President George W. Bush signed the Patriot Act, an anti-terrorism law drawn up in response to the attacks on the Pentagon and World Trade Center on September 11, 2001. The USA Patriot Act, as is officially known, is an acronym for Uniting and Strengthening America by Providing Appropriate Tools Required to Intercept and Obstruct Terrorism. Bush hoped this bipartisan legislation would empower law enforcement and intelligence agencies to prevent future terrorist attacks on American soil. And that's military history for today. Now it's time for the self-defense report. Take us there, Skip.
All of us here at Frontlines of Freedom want our listeners to get trained and get armed in that order. We fully support the right to keep and bear arms for all law-abiding families, and we encourage you to find out about the laws governing use of deadly force in your state and follow them to the letter. And of course, don't forget to follow the rules of safety and common sense whenever you're carrying a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
Well, a 65-year-old New Hampshire woman noticed a dark sedan quickly pull behind her at a traffic light, then continue to tail her car. She became increasingly concerned when the vehicle followed her into her parking lot at her apartment complex. She parked as close to the door as possible and swiftly exited her car. As she walked towards the door, she heard someone walking behind her and briefly turned around to see a man who was wearing a dark-colored hoodie following her. The woman took her gun from her purse and placed it in her coat pocket, keeping her hand on it all the while. Quote, 10 feet from the front stairs, the man caught up with her and started yelling in her face. He reached up and grabbed her. She pulled a pistol and shot him once in the chest and retreated to her apartment. The man was arrested at a local hospital and charged with felony robbery.
Thanks, Colonel. This woman did a fantastic job with just a tiny bit of room for improvement. So let's first talk about what she did right. First, her situational awareness was great. She noticed a man paying too much attention to her at the gas station, and that made her more alert. Then, on the way home, she noticed a car following her. Most people don't pay much attention to such things, but this woman did. Second, when she pulled into her apartment complex, she parked as close to the door as possible. Parking lots are transitional spaces and the place, most likely, where you're going to be attacked. Don't spend time there. She knew this and had only a short walk to her apartment door. Third, she trusted her gut instincts. She heard the man's car door close and footsteps behind her. She prepared for a potential attack by taking her gun out of her purse and placing it in her pocket so she could draw it quickly. This one thing alone could have saved her life, because drawing a gun while being physically attacked by a younger, stronger person isn't always possible. Fourth, this woman knew the laws of deadly force in New Hampshire and didn't hesitate to draw her gun and shoot when the man physically assaulted her. And fifth, her marksmanship was great. One shot to the chest did the job. Now, this woman did an outstanding job, and there's really only one improvement she could have made. When she knew she was being followed, she led the man back to her home. This is a bad idea. A better idea would have been to call 911 and then proceed to the closest police officer for help. Nonetheless, this New Hampshire woman did a great job protecting herself as she went toe-to-toe with a violent felon who was much younger and stronger than her. And Frontlines of Freedom salutes her superior performance. Let this be a lesson to young felons everywhere. Don't mess with a pistol-packing granny.
Well said, brother. Our movie of the month is Migrants. It's really a different kind of movie. You can go to the Frontlines of Freedom website, go to the blog and get the link. You can watch it for free. We'll review it at the end of the month, and I'd appreciate getting your comments about it. Please send them to me at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com. Next week on Frontlines of Freedom, political activist Patrick Colbeck will discuss how to get active. Then we'll share the story of some ordinary Americans who are heroes, and we'll review the movie of the month and cover the weekend Service Academy football games with Quentin Roberts. Our book, Frontlines of Freedom, with 19 authors, has the mission of helping all patriotic Americans step up and help our nation return to our traditional values of serving, not being served, of being in shape physically, mentally, and morally, of being proud of our nation. You can purchase that book on frontlinesoffreedom.com. Please help us get this call to action book into the hands of all Americans.
Thank you, friends, for joining us for Frontlines of Freedom today and every week on this great station. Please check us out on Facebook and add your comments. And if you missed any part of this show, hey, all our shows are available on demand at frontlinesoffreedom.com. We especially thank our military listeners for serving our country with honor and dignity and for keeping us all safe. God bless you and your families as you serve.
I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Thank you, listeners all across America, for joining us in the foxholes on the front lines of freedom. Stand tall, be proud Americans, and join me next week for military and veteran information that you won't get anywhere else on the front lines of freedom. Dismissed.